This is episode 392 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, July the 9th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation as 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 392nd edition of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. On the show today, Google takes the axe to some near and dear applications as the consolidation process continues at Mountain View. The Commonwealth Bank rolls out an updated Ka-ching, its banking application for those on the run, on both the Apple and Android platforms. But there is a potential hitch for Android users. Apple has been furiously working behind the scenes the last couple of days, responding to the problems some app updates were having, which was later shown to be an issue with the company's FairPlay DRM and specific app updates. As well, the first ever spam app finds its way through the App Store. We've got more on the Apple-Samsung stoush, Adam becomes a Minecraft addict, Microsoft's Server 2012 offerings become public, and Telstra is front and centre again over price hikes to premium products. There's the latest in gaming, and don't forget the usual Oddspot gadget app and website of the week. That's all to come on today's edition of Tech Talk Radio. First up, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio news desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, scientists at CERN announced the possible discovery of the Higgs boson. The Department of Broadband Communications and the Digital Economy loses sensitive online security details in the post. Google seeks $4 million in legal costs from Oracle. And EA launches SimCity Social on Facebook. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Physicists at CERN in Geneva have announced the discovery of what they believe to be the Higgs boson, a long-sought-after subatomic particle which they believe explains why matter has mass. Scientists are over 99% certain they've identified the particle, the existence of which was speculated by Professor Peter Higgs at the Edinburgh University in 1964. Chief Executive of the UK's Science and Technology Facilities Council, Mr. John Womersley, said he could confirm that a particle had been discovered that is consistent with the Higgs boson theory. Professor David Charlton is from the University of Birmingham. He said on ABC Radio that the evidence of a new particle is a huge breakthrough.
This particular particle looks just like the Higgs boson that we've been looking for now for about 40 years. We're really looking at the deepest structure of nature, really looking deep inside nature to see what everything is made of. I mean, the Higgs boson actually tells us why things have got mass, i.e. if you kick something, it doesn't just immediately fly off very fast, it goes slowly. And so that's really what we're understanding is how mass and matter is put together at a very fundamental level.
Professor Charlton is a spokesman for the ATLAS project, which is one of two teams working at the Large Hadron Collider, involving about 3,000 scientists from 38 countries, including teams from the universities of Melbourne, Sydney and Adelaide. Identification of the Higgs boson is being likened to the discovery of electricity over 100 years ago. What the discovery actually means is still unclear, and physicists working at CERN estimate that at least another 20 years research is needed before scientists fully understand the implications of the particle's existence and how it might be used in modern and future technologies. To more mundane news this week, in an embarrassing gaffe for Senator Stephen Conroy's office, the Department of Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy has confirmed it has lost a DVD containing the details of users subscribing to its Stay Smart Online alert service. AusCert, the Australian Computer Emergency Response Team, and operating under contract to the department, sent a DVD by Australia Post, which contained subscription information, including usernames, email addresses, password reminder phrases, and and cryptographically hashed passwords. AusCert said the DVD failed to arrive at its destination. According to a report by ZDNet, the DVD was sent via Australia Post's express service. ZDNet asked the department whether or not the DVD was tracked and why it was necessary to send the information via post in the first place, but to date has not received a reply. The department says the information has not been found or misused and that no privacy risk exists. Search giant Google is seeking over $4 million in legal costs from Oracle after Oracle launched an infringement lawsuit last month. Oracle filed the infringement case against Google over the use of 37 Java APIs in Android. A judge found that the API elements could not be copyrighted, and the claim against Google was dismissed. Oracle declined to receive any statutory damages after the disappointing result, but last week Google filed an official request for Oracle to reimburse the company for over $4 million in costs accrued in defending the case. The number covers transcripts, expert witness compensation, and more than $2.9 million just for collecting and copying documents. Judge William Alsop, who heard the original case, has yet to rule on Google's request. And games developer Electronic Arts has announced a partnership with Facebook with the launch of its new SimCity Social network last week. SimCity Social lets players plan and build cities on Facebook using the social network's enormous user base to build friendly relationships or form rivalries between towns. In a press release, spokesman Mr. Jamie Lays said, "SimCity Social is about playing with your friends, whether you do that with kindness, by helping put out a fire, or through mischievous acts like helping a criminal escape. The decisions you make with your friends will determine how the story of your cities plays out." There is currently no integration between standalone SimCity games on PCs, for example, and SimCity Social, although Mr. Lays said this was something that developers were considering. Mr. Lays said SimCity enthusiasts should visit facebook.com/SimCity Social to like the game and join more than 750,000 fans. He said players of SimCity Social who like the game will also get access to free in-game exclusive content. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The thing which has just really flummoxed me at the moment is that you have an iPad.
I do. I have a third generation iPad.
The pendulum is going to swing back the other way.
To the web base?
Yeah, because
this is partly due to the contempt that the networks have for viewers, and partly because there are so many alternatives at hand.
So it's serious days, serious times.
Look, I was very impressed with the slick retail experience.
That was nice.
What were you doing then, Dr. Ron? Do you remember the day when it came out?
Windows 7 Professional does not equal Windows 8 Professional.
Yep. Yeah. All the way down to Zimbabwe.
You can run your tablet-y type Metro applications on it.
Yep. Global LCD shipments have fallen for the first time ever.
The perils of not listening live.
Well, you're not known for your small talk.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, welcome to Tech Talk Radio, the flu-ridden crew is in this evening. I think Dr. Ron is the only one who's feeling half decent.
How I'm feeling really good, and I'm a little bit scared because everybody else is
not
coughing up blood.
It's a bit like that, isn't it? Well, that's what happens in the Southern Hemisphere around this time of the day.
It's like a scene from Outbreak in here.
It is.
So be anyway. Nice or I'll lick you.
Oh, yeah.
See, normally we bring in chockies for the panel for our day of radio, but today we've brought in soothers.
Pseudo-ephedrine. Oh.
Soothers. Can I have some?
Yeah, see me after the show.
Okay, yeah.
It's all regulated now.
It is. It is. But you can get it if you know who the right people are to speak to at the chemist shop.
Trust me, I'm a doctor.
I know. Mm.
From the Ronmacist.
That's it.
Yeah.
So this is a post Higgs boson
Her
show.
Person.
Yeah. Did you understand what was going on, Drew? That apparently we now know what causes weight in an atom.
What gives mass to matter?
Yes.
Yes. Does mass matter, apparently.
Have they said that it is the Higgs
Hello,
boson
Graham, by the
now?
Way. Sorry.
Hi, Graham.
I believe that, yeah, the situation is that they can't quite be 100% certain, except that there's a very clear indication of a particle at a certain mass that fits the range that the Higgs boson should be. And it's very, 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 very unlikely to be a coincidence. Mm. To the point of, you know,
I think it's going to give theoretical physicists work well, for the next few millennia.
Well, not as much as it would have done if they hadn't found it.
Don't they have to go back now and reprove all their theories now?
No. This confirms the existing model.
Okay. So
the reason they were looking for it is because the model that they had predicted that there should be one.
Okay.
The theory they had predicted that there should be something that does this, and sure enough, when they went looking for it, they found something that matches the description, and it's in the right place at the right time.
Okay.
So it's pretty likely that it is what they were looking for.
You just imagine what they'd be like at the party, wouldn't you? Physicists going off. Sorry, Dr. Ron, I spoke over you.
No, that's all right. Mr. Boson predicted that it would exist, or speculated that it might exist about 40 years ago, I think.
Wow.
He's a clever cookie, isn't he?
Yeah, very clever. He's still alive, still around.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
So if you're happy, been vindicated.
Oh, he's extremely happy. Mm. Over the moon.
He shed a tear.
Who's the other guy? Higgs.
No, he is Mr. Higgs.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Oh, who's boson?
A boson is a thing. It's a particle. It's a subatomic particle.
Ah, okay. So it's
correct me if I'm wrong, Graham, but that's right. Yeah. Like the McCollum particle. This is the
is there one
the Higgs boson? Well, they haven't found a McCollum particle yet. That's next. That's what we're looking for now. But it's very exciting. It's very very exciting.
Just, yeah, it is.
Knowing my luck, mine would be a virus of some description.
Why?
Because I'm very ill at the moment.
Oh, okay. Very leprechaunish tonight. You're in your greens.
I am.
Yeah.
Very green. To be sure.
Hey. How about
matching her complexion?
The DNS changer. They turned the servers off in America just in the last little bit.
Didn't care me.
Didn't it?
Nah.
That's good. You weren't infected.
No, I wasn't. No. Do you know anyone that was?
No, but apparently, according to ACMA, I think it was, during the course of the week, there were plenty out there. They were predicting around 6,000 odd Australians were.
Yeah, I was about to say it's only a small number. I think it's only a couple of 100,000 worldwide.
6,000 out of all the internet users in Australia is 0.03%-ish.
The internet got very fast.
That's not very many. Sorry.
The internet got very fast at work today. I wonder if it was coincidental at the same time they turned those servers off. Things loaded blindingly fast.
Well, did you plug something in?
No, nothing more usual than normal.
Something upstream got plugged in, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, because our ISP was chugging along there for days and with lousy ping times and the likes, and all of a sudden things got very fast again today, which was good.
So it's back to normal now.
Well, as normal as internet is in this country. Yes. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Anyway, so that was pretty much where it's at the moment, I think. Do we have anything else?
Quite weak otherwise.
It was incredibly quiet, wasn't it?
Yeah, the news out of CERN, I think, was the most interesting.
Yeah, a bit of atom splitting. We've got a thing down the road in Blackburn Road here in Victoria. Did they do anything simultaneously? Or was it a control that they did down there?
That's the accelerometer down.
Oh, that's an accelerometer.
No, not accelerometer. Sorry, what am I saying? I'm half asleep. It's a
synchrotron.
The synchrotron, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
Don't they do the same thing?
Accelerometer's what's in your mobile phone.
Okay. They throw atoms at things and see if they can break things.
Similar concept, but our one isn't as big as the one that they were using to do this Higgs research.
Yeah, the thing I actually liked, there was an injunction by a bunch of skeptical scientists who figured and were very afraid that there was going to be a black hole generated out of it, but apparently that got overturned.
Yeah.
Did you hear that?
I did.
Yeah?
Yeah, just strange.
Yeah, back when the facility was first opened, yeah.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so you go. News for the week, off the cuff, as they say. Dr. Ron, it's time for a bit of this.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to communicate with us. Or you can go to a website and fill out state-of-the-art web form.
Check out everyone in the chat tonight.
Form. Got lots of people in the chat. If you're listening live, chat.techtalkradio.com.au.
Bad TV today.
They really like us.
Well, they really like us.
Can I put this to you? They're creatures of habit. They're creatures of habit. They tune in.
Mm, like us.
We
like
do.
Us, really.
We just home up here every Monday, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah. Lots of correspondence this week, Andrew. White Stuff by the contact form says, "Howdy, folks. I don't know what that means. What does that mean? After listening to the latest podcast and the ease with which Dr. Ron set up his Gmail account on his iPad 3, I thought I'd share my experience with doing the same. So, he says, I had Gmail working fine on my iPhone 3GS, but as I tried to set up Gmail on the iPad Incarnation 3, it failed to connect and gave a wrong username password alert. I went to my phone, which then also failed to connect. Cursing to myself, I went to my desktop PC and checked I had the right username and password. It worked fine. I tried everything I could think of to make the mail app work. with Gmail. Nothing but the same error message. In desperation, I downloaded the Gmail app from the App Store, and it worked fine on both the iPhone and the iPad. At this point, I gave up on the Apple Mail app, and I figured that the Gmail app would have to become my default mail app. A week later, while logging into a newly installed Chrome browser, I was prompted to log into my Google account. During that process, I stumbled across the signing in using application-specific passwords page that Google hides in the settings of your account. Graham chuckles quietly to himself. Thinking that this might solve my problem, I used that page to make application-specific passwords for the iPhone and the iPad. Fixed the problem, good and proper. It reminded me of Arthur dealing with his local council in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. But look, you found the notice, didn't you? Yes, said Arthur. Yes, I did. It was on display in the bottom of a locked filing cabinet stuck in a disused lavatory with a sign on the door saying, Andrew,
beware of the leopard.
Keep up the good work, white stuff. Thanks, Mr. or Ms. Stuff. I am also using the...
Can you change your acronym, your handle? That's...
Yeah, it's strange.
We'll call you White from now on.
I'm also using the Gmail application on the iPad, and it works fine. I didn't try to set up the default mail app. Lena, you use an iPad?
I do.
Do you use mail on your
iPad?
So do
you?
I do. Yeah. I have no problem with mail.
You have no problem with mail. Do you use Gmail?
Yes.
And you use the default mail application on the iPad. Okay. Had no problem with that.
No, it doesn't seem to have a problem with that one. But maybe it's just to do with your settings that you've got sort of on the Gmail side of things by the sounds of it.
Yeah, it's a bit...
Seems likely.
It's a bit strange. Graham, you've used that Google application-specific passwords page before, have you?
No, but it just seemed like such an obvious culprit for his problem that, yes, that's what made me chuckle. Yep, that sounds like exactly the place to look.
That's good. That's good that it solved the problem. Regular contributor GJ via the contact form says...
Says.
Spoke.
Typed.
You can read PDFs in iBooks when you get to a site or open an email attachment that is a PDF.
Mm-hmm.
The browser or email app on your iPhone, so I guess it's true for iPads also, gives you the choice to open in iBooks. It can also sync to the mothership, be it iCloud or computer or whichever. I tried that, GJ, and yes, you're correct. I've got all my PDFs there in iBooks, which I can now view quite easily and happily. GJ says you might also consider an app that you mentioned way, way back, JotNote Scanner. That has OCR, optical character recognition, and can convert photos taken to PDFs. Kind of handy for receipts, but a bit of a storage hog. Cheers, GJ.
iBooks is good for storing PDFs. I've got a number of PDFs in iBooks on my iPad.
Do you?
It's good. It keeps them sort of all on a shelf, so you can quickly go back and refer to them and all that kind of stuff. I've got a lot of friends doing PhDs in very clever things that I'm not doing, and they send me their thesis to have a read of, and it's normally in PDF. So I've got like a row of all my smart friends' theses.
So you can just take them off the shelf from your iBooks and start reading.
Exactly.
That's nice.
Theses,
thank you.
Be careful how you pronounce that. Matt, via the contact form, says, G'day.
G'day. G'day,
Matt. First off, love the show, guys. Thanks, Matt. Not too sure if this has been covered before, so sorry in advance. Why does the iPhone call recent page only have history for 100 numbers? He's talking about the call log screen.
Because that's all anyone would ever need.
I like that answer.
Except for Matt. Matt wants more than that.
No, it's Matt that's mistaken.
Matt, there'll be an app for it. There's an app for everything.
Is there a way to increase it?
No, there won't be because apps on the iPhone can't get access to that database.
Oh.
That is true. What Graham says is true.
Mm-hmm.
I love everything about the iPhone. It's just they have dropped the ball on this one, and I am sick of diehard Apple fans saying, if you don't like it, get an Android. There are times when on site I need to call someone that called me maybe 4 or 5 days ago, and their number has already been deleted. Surely storing more numbers doesn't take up that much room. Regards, Matt. Matt, I had a look at the iPhone user guide on the Apple website, and I couldn't find a way to change that setting. I went into the phone settings and couldn't see how to do it. If anyone knows, drop us a line.
We'll put I had a bit of
I had a look too.
A scoot around, and I couldn't. There is no way. And there are documents saying that there is no way.
Okay.
So apparently Apple have decided that that's all anybody will ever need, and obviously because there's no way to argue with Apple, it's Matt that's in the wrong, and therefore he'll just have to change his habits.
Matt.
Or they had to make an executive decision about how many numbers came under the banner of recent and picked 100 and stuck with it.
I would have thought 100 was huge.
I think 100's a lot. And Matt, you're experiencing this problem because you are a high user of your phone, obviously. So you are using a lot more numbers in your recents folder than the average bear would. So that's why this is a problem for you. But
they'll ring you, Matt.
maybe. No, it would be good if they had some sort of something in your contacts that said, look at the call history from all these different contacts that you've got listed there.
You could log into your phone company and check your bill.
Well, he said he's annoyed at people saying that. Don't say that.
Yeah. Look at your monthly bill for calls. Yeah.
He doesn't like that.
I didn't read that bit out, but he did say that.
Thanks, Dr. Ron. No. Now we've lost a listener.
No, unfortunately, there's not much you can do about it apart from, I don't know, maybe there's an app that can get the information from it.
Or store the information as it's used or received, maybe.
The only one I found required the phone to be jailbroken. And there was an app that you used instead of the default dialer, I think, was the general idea, to make all your calls. And therefore, it logged everything in its own database, which obviously is not a very satisfactory solution on either front.
No.
But that the call information and the recent calls database and so on is not accessible to normal apps on unjailbroken phones, from what I can gather.
Lena,
so it's unlikely to be a solution.
User of an iPhone, if I, say, make two or three calls to Andrew and receive a few calls from Andrew, is that one entry in your call log, or is that like five or six or seven in a day?
I'll bring up my recents thing so I can say that accurately. In the phone menu, there's a little tab at the bottom called recents.
Yeah.
And that's got my last 100, as Matt's counted.
Yep.
It'll have... I got two calls from my mum today. That's why she's up the top with two.
Okay, so that's what I'm getting at. So that means that only occupies one line. Yeah,
with a number, and then you've got a little arrow next to it for more details.
And you can expand out. Was it an incoming call or an outgoing call?
Yep,
or
incoming
a missed call,
outcoming call, how long they went for.
Yeah, cool. Okay.
And all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, so that's the same as the current version of Android, I think.
100 is a lot to call recent.
Yeah, so that could be like 300 calls or something to fill up that list then.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a lot. You are experiencing a heavy use of that feature that I don't think they were expecting. Unfortunately, there's nothing you can do about it.
Matt, if we come across something, we'll let you know. Longtime friend of the panel, Andy B, says via email, "Hi guys, about a month back, the state government announced they'd be cutting TAFE funding across the board. Accordingly, many TAFEs in Victoria would be cutting back on the courses offered. I'm doing an IT qualification at present, and the IT department at my TAFE is heavily affected. Although I'm only doing a Cert 4 this year, Certificate 4, the coursework flows into a diploma the following year. That diploma will not be offered next year as a direct result of the government cutbacks. Staff in the IT department at my TAFE are trying to work out exactly what they can offer next year, but are having problems, mainly in that they don't know what resources they'll have available next year. Unless things change, it looks like they'll be offering a catch-all diploma qualification that won't help anyone who wants to specialise in a particular area. Worst case is, they just won't offer anything at all. While I realise that IT courses aren't the be-all and end-all of the education world, it does leave you questioning how people will gain education in IT without the right funding. What's worse is subsidies will likely decrease too, meaning many who are on low income simply won't be able to afford to go. Cheers, Andy." Yeah, TAFE is Technical and Further Education, for those listening outside of Victoria. It's for adult and mature age students to do training, get certificate training and do diploma training.
Generally, trade level training and that sort of stuff, isn't it? As opposed to more academic training that you do at a university.
A university. Thanks for letting us know about that, Andy. If other people have had similar experiences or are facing a similar dilemma, then let us know. I'm not sure what to suggest there. It's only
move
so much, so much reach that we have here, but
go to New South Wales.
Well, it may be that's what you have to do. Yeah,
South Australia
may have to go interstate if that's the state of things in Victoria at the moment.
It's pretty sad when it comes to that, though, isn't it? Education's everything, in my book.
Well, it is. Nothing beats a good education.
No.
Last but not least, Tech Talk Radio guest panelist Mark Diggins.
Oh, yes.
Says via email, after Tech Talk's Gadget of the Week a few weeks ago, the Telstra mobile smart antenna, which is being used to increase in-building coverage. Remember we had that as the gadget?
We did. Yeah. That was a while back.
Telstra's come out saying it pains to tell customers that it is not a femtocell.
Ah,
look over here.
It was,
look over here.
It?
Yeah, it's not a femtocell. particularly after their chief technology officer was quoted as saying he struggles to see the benefits of femtocells. I mean, he caned the Optus offering, because Optus are offering a femtocell.
Basically, it's Optus getting their customers to improve their network for them at their cost.
Yeah, and Telstra said, no, you'd never do that, and then they've brought this product out. But Telstra says it's not a femtocell. A Telstra spokesperson said this isn't...
What is it then?
It isn't a mass market product, unlike Optus's femtocell solution.
Yeah, doesn't someone come out to your premises and measure up?
Yeah, they measure up.
Give you a quote?
The antenna is designed for
like
a small
curtains, yeah.
subset of customers who are within our network coverage footprint and who want to extend coverage in specific instances where there is a weak signal due to low obstructions from building materials.
So it's an active device.
And local terrain features. Cheers, Mark. Yeah, I think it's like an active antenna or some sort of active device.
So how is that not a femtocell?
Well, more like a repeater.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe. Because it's not its own cell. It repeats the signal of another cell.
Oh, that's good. That clears it up. A repeater as opposed to something that comes in, transcodes, re-encodes and spits out another
or
channel.
Or connects to the network as its own particular part of the network. Yeah.
The Optus one, as I understand it, had its connectivity back through an internet connection, whereas this one's connectivity is back through the cell that would provide coverage.
Yeah.
You had to pay
so
for
that
it twice,
is, that is the difference, yeah. I was about to get scathing about people who just call it a different name and claim it isn't the same thing, but no, I think it is actually something different.
It is actually technically different, yeah. I think with the Optus one, you actually pay three times. I'm trying to remember what the
really,
three things
were. Really, what's
the third
one?
You paid for your upstream or your call data back into the network. You paid for the actual device. Oh, and you paid...
And you paid your data on the internet connection.
Yeah, that's right. You pay for your calls and your data on the...
Well done marketing at Optus on that one. Yeah. It's a ripper. Go for a fourth one. See you can do that.
That's it. Yeah. But being devil's advocate, look, we said at the time, it might be the solution for you. You might only have Optus coverage where you are, and it might get you out of a hole.
Yes.
Who
or
knows?
An underground car park, whichever
Who would
may
know?
Come first.
Who would know? That's our correspondence, Andrew. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
You are indeed listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're all coughing and spluttering this evening if you're wondering what's going on. And I'm apologising now, Graham, because you'll kill me later. But that's all right. We'll move on, shall we? He's giving me the look. All sorts of interesting things have happened during the course of the week of a small scale. One which got my goat up. Google's axing a few of its little plans, its products and services that you come with on the internet.
What are they getting rid of?
iGoogle. I love my iGoogle.
Yeah, it was
what
fun.
I must be the only one.
It was fun while it lasted, but
really?
I haven't been to google.com.au, the homepage, for years.
Okay, I've just got all my stuff, all sort of, I watch things in real time happen on my little iGoogle account, and they're going to get rid of it. But anyway, they obviously know better than everybody else, so there you go, amongst other things. So you don't use, it's just me, is it? No one else uses iGoogle?
What is iGoogle?
No, that answers the question. Dr. Ron, no?
No.
No? iGoogle was basically a customised homepage on your... So instead of going to the blank screen that they had, you could put your own stuff on it and do your own thing there, really.
Oh, like top sites for us Mac users.
Yeah, but I had a whole heap of RSS feeds on there and all sorts of things, you know, dollar values and all those sort of interesting things that you would normally put on your desktop, like a widget sort of thing.
Yeah. You could put, like pseudo widgets sort of on it, couldn't you?
Yeah.
And you could see like stock tickers and the weather and...
I traditionally used it for RSS feeds from all forms of sources of interest for me.
So did it fizzle because that's now something that the browser's offering us? More so than
no, it's more so the demand because the original creators of Google are actually taking the helm again over in Mountain View and they're bringing the company back onto what they consider to be the right track. And they're getting rid of some of the superfluous, these are my words.
This was only one of dozens of projects that they canned at the same time.
Lots of little things will go. It's Google Mini Enterprise Search is another one.
Which is a search appliance that you can install into your business to search your internal web pages and things like that. That product, although that particular product's gone, there are other products that do that same job. So that function isn't gone, but that particular product is.
Yeah. So anyway, there you go. Some Google axings of the technical variety. In other news this week, remember we had the leap second bug. Well, Qantas has confirmed that it was that took down their passenger. System at airports globally.
What's the name of the system? Amadeus?
Amadeus.
The booking and reservation system. Yep.
And the company, the mother company, had confirmed the outage that, yes, it was triggered by a Linux kernel bug prone to the global leap second pause. Aren't you glad you asked?
That more, was more likely attributed to Qantas not having their system up to date.
Oh, really?
Yeah, come on, don't blame Linux.
Really? Okay. In other news, Apple is cracking down on sites selling access to iOS betas.
Ooh.
Now, I'm assuming that the betas are available only to developers. Is this correct?
Yes.
Is he looking at Lena?
Yes.
Yeah? So,
as
therefore,
far as I know,
people
yes.
want to sneak them out.
I think profiting from them is not cool.
No.
No, I think that's a bit cheeky. If you don't want it, don't use it, but don't sell it to someone else.
So, well, anyway, apparently people are, and that's what Apple's... Maybe they'll revoke your developer pack or your developer privileges.
Mm, they probably
should. I don't know
what they do. You can't get, like, a dev kit for something and then sell it to someone on the street.
A dev kit being a developer's kit,
yeah.
So you can make programs before the launch of the new operating system.
Yeah, like if I had an Xbox debug machine and then went out and sold, you know, let someone on the street borrow it for a while, I would get in a lot of trouble. I would never be able to develop again.
We had an email, I think, Dr. Ron, during the course of last week's show. I think one of listeners wanted to try and get iOS, because you were talking it up a little bit.
Mm.
Well, they can't get it. I said, well, it's a developer release sort of thing. So, but I find it strange that, well, probably not strange, just people do all sorts of strange things and they sell things. So why not sell something that you shouldn't sell? I wonder if that's piracy. Would that be piracy? Well, it's just going against you.
Well, they're just in breach of
their agreement, aren't they?
Their contract, with Apple for being developers and having access to that, the iOS 6 developer beta.
It's a breach of trust, really. They expect that license is going to you and you're going to do the right thing with it.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Now, some good news during the course of the week. Well, for me, anyway. Who of you here uses or used to use Pandora, the internet streaming radio service?
Used to. Gave up on them about 5 years ago when they geo-blocked me.
It was geo-blocked on the weekend, Dr. Ron.
Really?
Ooh.
Really?
So, as a result, because I loaded it up, as you're probably all aware, I like Pandora because it's really cool. It lets you like and dislike tracks, and you can customize your own radio stations. And if you don't want to pay for it, they throw the odd ad in every five or six tracks, and it's just one ad.
Yep.
And when I used to listen to it, it used to be the local, you know, car dealer in San Francisco offering a, you know...
Oh, the ad that you heard.
U-Butte deal on a Buick.
Yeah.
So I don't know what we're going to hear in Australia, whether they're tailoring it for Australian marketplace.
That would make sense.
But if you want to give it a go, you can head over to Pandora. And I've tried it on my Android phone with a little app, which you can't get on our Australian market yet.
So where do you get the app from?
You look in those places on the internet where you shouldn't go.
Oh.
Excuse me. I found it on a site where you can download the APKs. Which is the little installer.
They're the
package.
Installer packages for Android.
Yeah, yep. And if you want to get techie, you can download a particular program which allows you to develop for Android, and you can install it through that. But just hang five; it'll come out in the Android store fairly shortly, I would imagine. So, give it a go if you're into good quality streamed music. Steve Westergren, if I remember, was the man behind it. We actually had him on the show.
We had a phone interview with him
when he first launched it. So very successful online. Yeah, I think purely because you can customize it. Anyone tried Spotify or any of those things since they launched?
No, I've heard bad things about Spotify.
Oh, really? What have you heard?
I was sick. I can't remember. Oh. I've labeled it in my brain as do not go there. Because of something that someone said, and I can't even remember what it was.
What about Sony's thing, Curiosity, or however the funny spelling that they had there, their music service, and all those? It was,
yeah.
They all just
that never
good
took
ideas,
off.
And they just disappear.
Yeah. No, that never took off at all, that one. That was supposed to come out with
It's on the Bravia, beta. When you see it on the telly, on the crossbar, and I think it's also on the game console as well. The PlayStation has it, so.
The one I've always used instead of Pandora that has always worked into Australia is Grooveshark.
Yeah, Grooveshark's been good.
Yeah, they throw ads up at you on your screen.
Is there an app for your mobile phone?
I do not know. I've never tried to use it on my mobile phone.
Because I use it when I'm painting. I whack the mobile phone on the bench, and I've got a little funny set of speakers that I plug into the earphone jack, and off I go.
Crank the volume up.
Absolutely.
Do it with Grooveshark or Pandora?
Pandora.
Or
the other thing that Pandora does, too, is it likes to know that you're there every, you know, half hour or so, and it stops playing unless you wiggle something or tap a mouse or do that. Because I think they pay... They have to pay royalties if it's streamed to you, and they don't like doing that if you're not listening.
If you're not listening, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
I remembered what it was I don't like about Spotify. it's got ads in it, and that you can't press mute. It won't continue if you mute the ad.
Really?
Yep. Which I don't think that's cool. So I'm not supporting them until they get rid of that, because I think that's crap. If I want to mute the ad, I want to mute the ad. Leave me alone. So, yeah.
But what's the difference? It's a bit like what are those video recording things that you use on the TV these days that won't let you skip the ads?
Yeah.
Same sort of thing. Yeah. Apologise for everyone being sick in the studio this evening.
Sorry about that.
All the coughs and splutters and stuff like that. So, it's all a bit surreal, really. But nonetheless, Pandora is back.
Yay.
And all good. So give it a try. I used to love it before I was there, and I went to all sorts of lengths to listen to it, and I got it. And now they're back.
Yay.
They can listen to it again legitimately.
With no proxies.
Yeah, no proxies. No proxies, indeed. Now, Dr. Ron, during the course of the news, you mentioned that someone lost some passwords. The ACMA. Was it ACMA who sent across some passwords? They popped it in the post. Australia Post?
No, this is embarrassing. This wasn't ACMA. It was AusCert.
AusCert
of all organisations, the Australian Computer Emergency Response Team, they were operating as a contractor for Senator Conroy's office, for the Department of Broadband Communications and Digital Economy. They have an online security service, which is called Stay Smart Online, of all things. And they had a large database containing usernames, hashed passwords, password reminder phrases.
What's a hashed password?
Hashed password.
It's encoded.
A hashed password is encoded. It's not in plain text.
So if you open it up in the plain text, it'll be hashed 236 capital E lowercase f and mean nothing to anybody. Is that right?
Yeah, it'll just be meaningless.
Oh, so it's safe then.
Meaningless characters. Yeah, but look,
it's not. Quite often you can use the hashed password to in place of the existing password if you know how.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't they have algorithms like MH5s and things like that?
Yeah, that's what the hashing is. But if you've got the hashed password, sometimes that's all you need.
Okay.
They've also got email addresses, usernames, even just a database with email addresses being out in the wild. That's horrible. For whatever reason, AusCert took it upon themselves to send this database via Australia Post on a DVD.
Gutsy.
And never arrived at its destination.
In a yellow bag. I've lost yellow bags before. They're not safe.
They're the express post bags.
Yeah.
According to a report by ZDNet.
It'll be stuck between a post sorting machine and the table and the post at the local post exchange.
Yeah. Best case scenario, that's where it is. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Flew off the hurdy-gurdy as it was being loaded.
Yeah, ZDNet asked the department why it was necessary to send this information via Australia Post in the first place, but at the time of going to air on Tech Talk this week, hadn't received a reply. The department says there's no privacy risk, so that's comforting.
Oh, that's comforting, isn't it?
Good. Yeah. That's helpful.
Really?
Well done, AusCert. Well done, Senator Conroy's office. Not sure what, if anything, they can do about that, but they have owned up to it anyway. And well, ironically, I think they said there is no privacy risk, but everyone should change their passwords.
Just to be sure.
All that sort of stuff. Change their email addresses. Yeah.
Good work.
It's a good one.
Now, addiction to technology and to other things. Don't want to get personal here, but nonetheless, if you want to get personal, that's fine. Have you ever been addicted to anything?
No, I don't have an addictive personality. So I've been told, paid a lot of money for psychologists to tell me that. So
never, really?
I've got it in black and white.
Well, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
his mother had him tested.
Yes.
Oh, are you one of these tested at when you're three?
That's right.
One of those new tests that everyone's up in arms about.
Assemble an AK-47 blindfold when I was 3 years old, all that sort of stuff.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people get addicted to all sorts of things, to pokies and to stuff like that. And I guess...
Cigarettes?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Booze. Technology? Do you get addicted to technology?
No.
Really?
No.
How do you know when you're addicted?
When it starts impacting on your life in a negative way.
If you were on a desert island and didn't have any internet, would you... start shaking and going,
well, I'd be a little annoyed because it'd be a lot harder to get off the desert island if there was no internet.
You couldn't tweet.
No, that would, yeah.
See?
Twitter is an extension.
Are you addicted to being?
No. Because it doesn't negatively affect my life. It is an extension of my hand. Twitter, my phone is definitely an extension of my hand, but I'm not addicted because I don't think it negatively impacts my life.
It's not an addiction, that sort of thing. There's no physiological dependence. There's no...
Oh, I think there could be.
No, there's not.
You could if someone loves the attention.
It's a compulsion.
No, if someone loves the...
That's a compulsion. That's not an addiction.
Okay.
Like a chemical,
I believe you can be addicted to attention.
No, that's a compulsion. That's all psychological. An addiction is chemical.
An addiction is psychological.
You can have a psychological addiction. You can.
Of course you can.
The chemical I feel when something emotional happens to me or psychological happens to me is my body getting.
When you're addicted to smoking because of a physiological dependence on the nicotine molecule.
Someone could be addicted to smoking for that, but also because they like how they look when they're smoking or they get off on the fact that people think they're badass.
Yeah, but that part of it isn't the addiction part of it. That part of it's the compulsion part.
It could be.
What was your point to your question, Andrew?
I'm glad I asked.
Yeah, I'm too.
I think there's many aspects to addiction, personally.
That's good. It'll continue in the car park after the show today. I can guarantee of that. Adam Turner has a view from the couch.
Oh, good, good.
He's coming out of the closet for... Anyway, I'll let him tell you. Here's this week's view from the couch.
Adam Turner's view from the couch.
Hi, I'm Adam. And I'm a Minecraftaholic. Well, that's not quite true, but I could be if I wasn't careful. For many people, computer games are a great way to wind down at the end of the day or perhaps kill a few hours on the weekend, but sometimes they stop being healthy. Sometimes you can become obsessed with a game to the point where it starts to impact on the rest of your life. I think the trick is to strike the right balance and make sure that you're playing the game rather than letting the game play you. Don't worry, this isn't an hysterical video games are evil rant. People have been obsessed with things long before video games came around. And I don't like to throw around the word addiction either, because I think that people tend to abuse that term, if you'll excuse the pun. There is the term behavioural addiction, which differentiates from substance addiction. Perhaps that's what we're talking about here. And I don't want to argue about medical terms, but I just think obsession is the right word that I'm looking for. I've known for a long time that I have obsessive tendencies, and to be honest, it actually helps in the work that I do sometimes to become a bit obsessed with technology, get a bit carried away, spend a lot of time with it, and then write really interesting, slightly crazy stories about it. It actually works quite well. But it does mean that I have to take care, particularly when it comes to things like computer games. The fact that I can see this in myself gives me a significant advantage over people who are completely in denial about their obsessions. I can also see these obsessive traits in my son, who's still at primary school, so the desire for me to set a good example for him gives me an extra incentive to practice things in moderation. Due to these obsessive tendencies of mine, I've deliberately stayed away from open-ended, non-linear environments such as Second Life or World of Warcraft. These days I have a business to run, bills to pay, a family to care for, stories to write. It just isn't fair on the people around me to lose myself in an open-ended virtual world. When I do play games, I tend to lean towards problem-solving games with a clear goal. I might still become a little bit obsessed when you get stuck on a particular level and you've just got to play it till 4 o'clock in the morning until you get it done, but at least eventually I reach a satisfying conclusion, at which point I can walk away. A few times I have become stuck on puzzle games to the point where it no longer really seems healthy. At that point, I've had to stage a little mini internal intervention and force myself to abandon them. Recently, I've tumbled down the rabbit hole that is Minecraft, and I can sort of see myself slipping into obsession. Initially, it started innocently enough. I was dabbling in Minecraft because my son was interested. He's heard people talk about Minecraft, he's got friends at school who play. He actually knows more about Minecraft than I do. Every day he comes home from school with new tips about Minecraft, and I'm worried that he actually spends more time talking about Minecraft than doing his schoolwork, which doesn't sound like anybody I know. Anyway, he's just a kid, he wants to have his fun, it doesn't seem fair that he should miss out on Minecraft because of me, so I thought it was something we could try together. We could sort of be like safety buddies as we dive into Minecraft, keeping an eye on each other and making sure it doesn't get, you know, too out of control. We've already got rules in my house regarding screen time. They originally revert to watching television, but now they encompass any kind of electronic entertainment. Tablets, televisions, computers, phones. The rules are not before lunch and not hidden away in your bedroom. Another one, which is admittedly more of a guideline, is only for an hour or two and then you can do something else. These are rules for the kids, but they're kind of useful to apply them to myself sometimes as well. Where possible, I prefer that we play games as a group activity, like, you know, Lego Indiana Jones or Lego Star Wars on the Wii. Playing games as a family seems to be a bit healthier than sitting there for hours on your own and becoming a bit obsessed. Following my own little guidelines, I set up Minecraft on the Media Center PC so we could play on the television. I was at the keyboard, but my son and daughter were playing with me and everyone had a say in what we did. Like I said, the idea was to turn it into a group activity rather than a solo obsession. Things went fine for a while. Then I started playing the game after the kids went to bed. My excuse was I was just gathering resources, you know, looking for ore, for iron, digging a few things up so that when we played together, we could focus on more fun activities. It sounded quite reasonable, you know. After a few times, my solo Minecraft session started to override time that I'd allocated to do other things like getting some work done, going to bed, you know, those kind of important things in your life. The last few nights, I actually clocked out quite a few solo hours on Minecraft, using the Tour de France as an excuse. I've been using LogMeIn on my MacBook to play it on the Media Center and trying to pretend at first, you know, that to my wife there's actually getting some work done, which was pretty stupid to do because it was pretty obvious what I was doing. At this point, I started to notice those telltale signs that indicate it's time to pull back a little bit. They're kind of the universal indicators of an obsession or addiction that's taking its toll on your life. You start to undertake the activity for longer than you intended to. You think about it and talk about it too much. It's the last thing you think about at night and the first thing you think about in the morning. You start to neglect other duties and people around you. You start to hide it from the people around you. These are the signs that it's getting a bit out of control. Now, to be honest, my behaviours are quite mild, which is why I don't like to use terms like addiction, because addiction is a serious thing that people have, and I'm not saying that what I'm going through is the same as them. But I know myself well enough to clearly see a bit of an obsession emerging. The next stages in this kind of thing are isolating yourself, lying about your usage, you know, significantly neglecting your other responsibilities, but I don't intend to let it come to that. Thankfully, like I said, one thing I don't suffer from is denial because I can see it in myself and that makes it much easier for me to deal with it. I'm not a Minecraftaholic, but only because I realised that I could be a Minecraftaholic if I didn't set limits for myself. I don't intend to abandon the game, but I am setting some stricter guidelines for myself when it comes to playing without the children. I think it's happened to us all sometimes. You find yourself tumbling down the rabbit hole and then, you know, there's nothing wrong with putting effort into a game. There's nothing wrong with playing a lot of a game. I'm not saying anyone who plays games a lot is an addict or is obsessed. I'm just saying you need to know how to keep it in perspective, and sometimes you need to know when it's time to simply walk away.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
And during those 6 minutes in the studio, others should have walked away. We're still going. Have we come to a conclusion?
No.
Okay, good. Should we move on?
Yes.
I was listening, Adam. I was very interested.
Oh, dear. No, he makes some very good points.
Obsessed and yes. Or addicted to Minecraft.
Yes.
A Minecraftaholic, he said. That was a good term. I like that one.
Yeah?
No.
Yeah. I think I was a bit of a Minecraftaholic for a while there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not in a way that it ruined your life, though.
No, not at all. No. But no. I did spend a lot of time playing it, though.
What
time
Minecraft was there for you when you needed it.
Yeah, well, it definitely was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It wasn't a negative thing in your life. If it was, we would have sat down and had a talk.
We did. I think I might have texted you at one point and said, this is the amount of time I'm spending on it. Is this normal? Am I okay? Do I need help?
And what did I say? I said,
you said
are you showering?
Yeah, you're showering, you're eating.
Our job's getting done.
That's right. Yeah, you did.
Are you happy?
Are you getting to work on time? Are you getting to meetings on time?
Are you getting up out of bed in the morning when you need to?
No.
And the answer to those three was yes. I said, no, you're fine.
You're fine.
You're just having a really good time.
That's right. Adam's right. You've got to keep it in perspective. And obviously, if you start avoiding other things in your life, or it starts to have an effect on things in your life, whether it's Minecraft or anything.
The perspective that I liked was from a kid's perspective, because kids can't obviously, they don't know, do they, whether they're obsessed or whether they're, you know, addicted to something like that. You know,
they sometimes need adults to keep a sense of perspective for them.
Yeah, when little Johnny has his iPad under the sheets at night going hammer and tong at 2 a.m, just, you know, doing Minecraft, digging and mining and stuff like that, that's when I think adults need to step in.
Yep. But yeah, do have to ask yourself as a parent, though, would I be bothered if it was a book? And then really have a think about that.
It's a valid question, but at 2 o'clock in the morning,
Probably not books either.
All people should be sleeping.
Yes.
Sort of obsessive behaviour is normal in kids too, isn't it? Isn't it normal to have an obsession with something for a time and
well, they fall in love wholly and completely.
And to watch the same movie 400,000 times and
oh, tell me about it.
And
mine was The Little Mermaid.
Really?
Yep. I broke the VHS tape.
We've watched The Three Stooges, I reckon, half a dozen times in about 2 days.
But with kids, it passes. It doesn't. I mean, it might affect them for a little while and then goes and passes, doesn't it? When I was a kid.
I'm still.
I got
really
obsessed with things.
Into things. I think it's a personality trait for some kids. They just really like their stuff.
Phoenix in our chat room says, uh-oh, Adam was too busy with Minecraft to do a proper view from the couch. Oh, come on.
That's harsh.
That Phoenix. Is harsh. He's not there to
He was pouring his heart out.
You know, that was a pure therapy session, that one.
It was.
He started some interesting discussions in the panel here, too. I think Adam's doing his job.
Correct.
I prescribe Minecraft. Dr. Lena prescribes
I
Minecraft.
See your prescription and I'll fill it. I'll come back for repeats
just
as necessary.
Briefly,
what are the indications for a dose of Minecraft?
Be on your own. Don't always play it with your kids because, you know, they tend to ruin things, kids do.
I went to at our local primary school, I went to a presentation. The students in grade 4 had to display to the parents and to the classroom projects about certain landmarks and so forth around the world. And to my surprise, all the boys, no girls, all the boys, or 4 boys in particular, used Minecraft to build objects in the real world. The Eiffel Tower was built was one that I went, wow, that's impressive.
Mm.
And I thought nothing more of it until someone had built Wembley Stadium with the lights on and and with the lights on and the lights off. So it glowed at night.
Wow.
And they built it in Minecraft.
Very
I thought,
cool.
Seriously, when has this game become an educational program?
It has, yeah. There's if you're on Twitter, there's Minecraft Teacher. Tweets some really amazing things. He's a teacher in the United States, and he's teaching 4th and 5th graders over there all about politics and sociology and our community through Minecraft. And it's really fascinating how they deal with griefers, which are people who go and ruin everyone's fun and all that kind of stuff. He tweets about it a lot and how they're using Minecraft in the classroom. It's really fascinating stuff.
So griefers within the game.
Yeah, so how they deal with kids in class who want to burn down people's cabins and generally be mischief makers.
Is that a telltale sign for the rest of their lives?
Well, they start to
keep the matches away from them.
Well, was it bedwetting, hurting animals, and lighting fires? Maybe it's griefing things in Minecraft as well.
Apparently, as you told us,
a serial killer.
You went to university and learned about these things during the view from the couch.
No, it's really interesting to follow him and see what they're doing because they are using Minecraft as an educational tool in a really cool way.
It was never built for that, was it? It was purely for entertainment, but obviously...
Well, it's one of those things
Once you build an open world like that where you can do anything, then, yeah, why not?
Yeah, people can put their own sort of spin on why things are happening. Some amazing things have come out of the said empty shell of Minecraft.
Mm. All right, we might take a break, clear our throats, cough, eat cough lollies and drink lots of water, and we will return after this.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
Moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra's come under the fire again.
Uh-oh.
For putting up their prices. I think everyone's churned back to them now. So if you're into looking for broadband, mobile broadband in particular, and broadband plans.
Yes, the $30 plan was $40. Yeah.
They've all gone up. Yes, less for more. So is this a return to the good old days of
Telstra? Is it less for more or the same for more?
No. The same for a little bit more, yeah.
It's the same for a little bit more, which is less for more, if you well, which side of the fence you sit on. So, yeah, Telstra's overhauled its consumer mobile offerings in the past month, beginning with an increase to the data allowance, so it's increased some things. That's on its higher tier. And however, it's also upped the price from 150 to 180 bucks. Now, we spoke about that a while back, if you remember that, and I think 180 bucks for 12 gig, I think it is, all up on their mobile broadband, which lasts you 12 months and it rolls over. It's not as if you lose it. If you recharge your mobile broadband, it continues. So if you got, you know, after 12 months, you got 2 gig left or two whatever left, recharge, it continues on.
So it's not a case of use it or lose it.
No, it's use it or recharge.
Okay.
And so when you do have a heavy month, you can actually go for gold and know that it's going to, you know, balance out across the course of time. But anyway, Telstra have been putting their prices up, and I'm wondering whether that's something to do with the marketplace. Everyone's there now. Because even in the office, Brian was complaining about the fact he moved from Optus to Telstra. And back then, when he moved across, it was perfect. And now he has call drops like he had on Optus. So maybe everyone's moved to Telstra.
So these data-only plans?
Predominantly, yes.
For example, if I had a SIM card and I wanted to put it into my iPad or...
No, they've raised the prices on some of their smartphone plans and other things as well. So they're across a range of their different plans.
Right.
So, yeah, there you go. Across the range.
Hmm.
Are you a user of Thunderbird? Thunderbird being an email client, which is traditionally...
Look, I am. Not as a rule. I don't use it personally for email, but I use it as a tool if I need to get mail off a mail server, for example, and store a copy locally.
Okay.
It's made by the Mozilla Foundation.
Well, yes.
Hence the reason why we're talking about it tonight.
Yeah. It was a free client. A lot of people used it, especially if you're of the Linux flavor.
Yeah.
And was it available in other... I never used it. Was it available for other operating systems?
I don't know if it was available for Mac or not. It's probably... It wouldn't surprise me if it was. It was used pretty widely.
Anyway, they've decided to focus in other areas. They're not killing it. They're just going to let it die a death over time for those people find better things to use and probably move on to it. But sign of the times, Thunderbird was always a good option there for a lot of people that...
Yeah, unnecessary in a lot of ways these days, though.
Yeah. Well, that's probably why they've decided not to...
I used to use it all the time. It used to be my primary email client and have a range of accounts in. And it's all now... I all now do that same stuff using Gmail. It just hasn't got the usefulness that it used to have.
Hmm. Yeah, versions available for Mac OS 10. There you go. And also, I used to use it on Ubuntu.
That was
when
Linux.
I was running a Linux desktop for a while. Yeah.
Yeah, do you still run that? Or have you...
No, this wasn't quite there. I'd like to revisit it, actually, because I have
all
used
code the... base. Were you running the what do you call it? Looks like a computer screen, not a Windows type sort of GUI.
The command line interface is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
No, I was using it in desktop mode, okay. So it did look like a conventional, you know, graphical desktop. I have used Ubuntu just recently to do a couple of different things and some very specific tasks. It looks a lot nicer now than it did a few years ago, back in the days of Dapper Drake and Foxy Fox or Feisty Fox or whatever the code names for the operating system were. But no, Thunderbird, yeah, it's always been the partner of Firefox, yeah, the web browser. And Firefox is used...
Which also came out of the Mozilla...
Mozilla Foundation.
Yeah.
And Firefox is used.
What Mozilla have said is that they believe that the users are happy with the way the program works at the moment, and they're going to stop developing in terms of new features and so on, but they are going to continue to keep the product stable and presumably do security updates. But the other thing that's worth noting is that it's an open source program anyway, so if somebody other than Mozilla wants to make changes or fork what they call fork the project into something else or... continue developing in a different direction. Someone else could do that, and it doesn't look like it's going to die. It just is not going to undergo that active sort of product evolution that's going forward. It's just going to stay as it is and kept stable and kept secure.
All right, so there you go. End of an era for Thunderbird. An email client. In other news this week, the Commonwealth Bank brought out Kaching, which is, we had the Commonwealth Bank on the program a couple of months back when they brought out the Apple version for the iPhone. Now, back then, they promised an Android version, and they have since delivered during the course of last week a device, an application for the Android, and I believe updated the iPhone device. Now, that's all good and fine. Dr. Ron, you're a user like I am and like Graham is. We have the HTC Desire handsets, which are running Android, yet we can't download this application, even if you wanted to. You can't download it and put on because it's not compatible with the handset. Now,
What does that mean?
Exactly. If you try and find it on your device in the App Store, it won't be there. If you go online to the Google Play Store on your favorite web browser and log in as your Gmail account, you will find it, but it will say it's not compatible with your device.
Oh, that's absurd. Why
is
that?
In this day and age, why do people author programs that are not compatible with handsets that are out there?
Well, the ATO still don't let me do my tax online on a Mac. So, wait this in line.
I've heard about that. What do they call it? E-tax or something like
E-tax,
that.
E-tax, yeah. Get with the times, people. Honestly.
Anyway.
You're taking my money. Do something with it.
Yes. They don't spend it well enough. So, they can't. You'd want to think they'd open up their revenue channel so they can keep bringing more in. But no, obviously not.
The solution for E-tax, of course, there's no reason why it has to be a standalone program that runs on a PC. E-tax should be a web-based system.
It should.
And therefore open to anybody who's running the right security.
It should. All right. And it is that time of the year, isn't it? Have you done it yet?
No.
No. Not many people have. I had to do a group certificate the other day. What do they call them now? Payment summaries.
But payment summaries. That's right. Yeah. PAYG payment summaries.
Yeah. Pay as you go.
Yeah. Don't say group certificate.
Yeah. Why not? Is that a bad thing to say nowadays?
Well, the ATO listens to us.
Oh, they do, don't they?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Sorry.
Yeah. In that case, of course I've done my tax. Of course I've done my tax.
Do you know this is a very quiet time of the year for accountants?
Really?
Do tell. Have you been to one?
Yeah, I went to my accountant about a week ago to ask him some questions. And
you walked straight on in?
Yeah, exactly. And I said, I suppose...
Maybe it's time you changed accountants.
Well, maybe. Yeah, thinking about that. I said, I guess you're really busy this time of the year. And he said, no, we're not. We get really busy in like...
Before the deadline.
September, October, November, when everyone gets everything in to get submitted. But he said, right on like 1st of July, he said, no, it's quiet. No one's done anything. If you want to get stuff done, you want to do something else, you want me to look at something for you, give it to us now. It's a good time.
Cool.
There you go.
There's a lull. There's obviously a lull there. It takes people a few weeks or months to get all of their, all of the papers
and
all their PAYG payment summaries together.
Oh, you use the word again.
Yes.
Yes.
And get them into their accountants.
14th, all employers have to get to their staff, have to get those pieces of paper. Anyway, that's not what we're here to talk about.
No, we've wilfed.
Microsoft have brought out Windows Server 2012 editions. There's five flavors for you to choose from if you're into Windows Server 2012. I hadn't even got past 2008 yet.
Yeah, they've changed the way this works from the previous version, which is...
Oh, you may be able to shed some information on it. There's five versions, Data Center, Standard, Essentials, Foundation, and another one which eludes me at the moment. Maybe there's four versions, and I can't count. The Foundation is
limited to 15 users.
Yeah, 15 users.
And no virtualization.
It doesn't say that. Yes, that's right, with no virtualization rights. And it's OEM only. What does that mean, Graham?
It means that it can only be supplied with a new PC from a PC builder.
Okay. So that's the base.
So you can't buy a PC without a operating system one and then go and license it through the volume licensing.
Yep.
Foundation licensing.
So you rock into your local...
Entry level. You go to your computer shop, you buy an HP server with Foundation already installed on it for you.
Very good. The next one up's Essentials, which is the small business environment.
Slightly bigger, yep. You can have up
simple interface, pre-configured connectivity to cloud-based services, no virtualization rights. 25 users, $425, star.
Yep. How much?
$425.
Yep, okay.
That's the US pricing, by the way.
Yep.
So add the Australia tax and it'll be $1,000 more.
Yep. And then the next one up is going to be the standard.
Standard.
Which is the one that you volume license in a commercial environment.
Yep.
It's got unlimited number of users. It's got all the full range of features. But you can only do two virtual instances.
Yes, correct. Do you know your stuff? Low density or non-virtualized environments. And $882 is the going rate for that one, US
dollars.
And
what you can do if you... there was a version before called... pardon me, called Enterprise, which seems to have fallen off the map, yeah. which a lot of businesses use for virtualization. You could run four virtual machines with Enterprise. Now this is going to be replaced by just getting two standard licenses. So by adding on additional licenses of standard, you just add your virtualization rights.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've got if you need to run four machines, you buy two copies and run four virtual machines on the one physical server.
Okay. And the top of the list is data center, highly virtualized private and hybrid cloud environments.
Which bigger organizations are going to use because they can run any number of virtual machines that they like.
So what is a virtual machine in a server environment? It means the applications are running on the server, not on the client. Is that right?
Virtualization is always... I always find this a hard thing to explain. Instead of Windows running directly on your machine, you have a special program that runs on your machine that creates sort of software-emulated virtual machines that you can run a full copy of the operating system in.
And the user doesn't even realize that.
No. So, and in particular here, we're talking about servers, so people are not going to be... They don't need a separate screen and a keyboard and a separate box for each machine. All you need to do is to keep your Exchange server separate from your SQL server. You can run them on the same hardware, and you can share memory and CPU resources and storage resources, like disks and so on. And have a separate installation of Windows that's isolated. It is running on its own virtual machine, but you can have several of these running on the same physical machine. Can anyone help me explain this any better? Or
no, you're doing a good job.
Okay. it's really good for making maximum use of the hardware, because in the old days, generally, your server would sit there and 99% of the time it would be using no CPU. It would have a certain amount of memory open.
It would have jobs like looking after print queues,
yeah,
and connecting people to the internet and doing mail.
Someone would connect to it and ask it for something. It'd have a burst of activity and then it'd be quiet again. And this allows you to share sort of those resources across multiple virtual machines running on the same physical hardware. So you get a normal server. You might get one that's really beefed up. You might have two CPUs in it, and you'd probably put a ton of memory in it these days.
It's cheap.
Because memory's, that's right, and that's what you need. And then you can run, you buy a data center, and you can run half a dozen different servers. You can have a couple of domain controllers. You can have a couple of Exchange servers. You can have your Edge server for Exchange. File and print servers. You can have a database server. You can have a specialized server for some application that your business runs. And all running on one machine.
So there you go. That's really how the server system works. Virtual server. Is that complex, as someone said in the chat, in a nerdy type sort of environment? But businesses need them.
It's becoming the way that you do your servers in your organization these days. It's so much better and so much more cost effective. And of course, a virtual machine, because it's not tied so directly to the hardware, you can move it from one virtual server to another. So it really does allow you to make best use of the hardware that you've got in your IT department.
Dr. Ron, you're a debateer of tablets. You like playing with
tablets of recent times.
All different manner of flavor of tablets.
I've played with a few.
Does it upset you that the Galaxy Tab 10, the ban was upheld in America?
The Galaxy Tab 10.
Remember last week we were talking about how the fact that Microsoft, Apple had to put up $98 million bond.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Just in case the appeal was overturned and they had to give that money to Samsung because of the fact that lost revenue.
Doesn't affect me. It's happening in America.
It is.
Couldn't care less. Next.
Oh, really? Moving on. Well, anyway, Samsung...
It's a long way away. Tell us what happened, though.
Oh, well, let me just paraphrase all. Samsung lost the appeal.
They did, right? Yep.
So they can't sell the Galaxy 10.1, but they're now going to do some software updates to change it.
Yep.
The Google's Nexus was in the firing line as well, and they pulled that off the App Store or the Google Store in the US.
Yeah.
And now they're doing an update on that so they can put it back on, and Google has said it'll be back in the next little bit. So we're really seeing these patent trolls really kick in at the moment, aren't we?
Patent trolls, yeah. Yeah. There was another one during the week, which was Google going after Oracle for costs as well. That was a big one.
Too. Yeah, that was what do you call the APKs?
The APIs. APIs. Yeah, Java APIs. Yep. Yeah. Oracle launched legal action against Google and said that they're infringing their patents, and the judge said, no, you can't actually claim that.
Can't patent an API.
No, well, you can't patent what you're saying that you have. It's not valid, and it wasn't upheld. And so
now, an API, for those who don't know what it is a little program that sits between a developer and a device, whether it be a Google device at the end, and it enables you to actually command it to do things, doesn't it?
So it's a way that programmers use to control or to write software for a particular environment or a particular device.
Mm-hmm.
And application programmers interface, and it's an API. So, yeah, the judge said, no, sorry, bad luck. And now Google's seeking costs from Oracle. It said that they spent $4 million in legal costs defending the civil action.
Yeah.
The judge has to rule on it, though. The judge has to say, His Honor William Allsop has to approve the application. Yeah, but you're right, patent trolls everywhere. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So what's going to happen with the Samsung one? Where are we with that then?
I think they've moved on from it now. And obviously we'll see the 10.2 come out, which will be slightly different, I suspect, just guessing.
Did I see somewhere that that Apple got told during the week, no, you can't patent slide to unlock?
Did you?
Go away.
It may have.
I've got to have a quick look at that. We should mention that as well, as he slides to unlock something in front of him. Yeah. That was, Apple tried to patent that, I think, and I think it got laughed.
Well, they did succeed in patenting it, but it got overturned by a court who found an earlier version of a similar concept, that the slide to unlock was a quote, obvious development from.
Okay.
So common sense is prevailing here, Graham.
In this one rare case, yes.
Very good.
All right, just
I can't remember where that court was. It was somewhere odd.
Hopping on the Google machine, it was in the High Court in England.
Oh, there you go.
And it was HTC that was successful.
Okay.
The English High Court found that Taiwanese smartphone maker HTC did not infringe Apple's photo management patent. Well, another three of Apple's patents for slide to unlock, multi-touch, and multilingual keyboard capability were invalid.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see that. A major victory for Taiwanese manufacturer, they're saying in the press.
More information there on Australian IT.
Very good. All right, must be time to find out what's going on in the computer world, because Lynn hasn't been here for 2 weeks.
I want to find out. What's been happening at Free Play and all that good stuff.
All right, I'll push this button.
Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
Even when sick, I'll still dance to my music.
Yeah, no, it's good.
It's the rules.
Is it?
If I stop, I'll get in trouble.
Oh. Who by?
The dance police.
Me.
Of course.
Oh. So you haven't been here for a week or two. That means lots have been happening. The last time we spoke, you were all excited about heading off to Acme.
Game Masters. Yeah, that was...
What happened?
That
do
was
tell.
Fantastic. We got all dressed up and looked very dapper.
Are there photos?
For the launch, yes, there are. I'll give you one to put on the website if you want.
Okay.
There was a red carpet launch on the Wednesday, and we had lots of fun there. It wasn't Ted Bellew, it was the other guy. Who is he?
That guy.
Andrews.
Yeah, some government person who didn't really want to be there.
A Bellew minion.
Yeah, someone paid to
which
look like
of
they
politics?
Care. I have no idea.
Oh, representative of the current
interest
government
in politics. Sorry, so, no, it was really good. They had the night where they opened, and then the next night, and the next day, and the day after that, both made up the Game Masters Forum, which was something that industry folk could go to see some panels and some discussions. And I chaired one of those panels.
Yay!
So that was really good.
That's exciting. That's very good.
That was exciting. I didn't even throw up a little bit. Not even a little bit.
Because you get a bit...
You're the consummate
you become
professional
ill
now.
When you're nervous, don't
I am.
You?
I'm a nervous puker. I am. That's how my body deals with nerves. I don't shake. I don't sweat. I just puke. but no, I was pretty good. Right, we all deal with nerves differently. So that was really fun for me. I was chairing the panel on games and cultural spaces, which with some really, really smart people, which it's actually really nerve-wracking to chair a panel full of super, super smart people with huge brains.
People who you've grown up and gone, I want to be like him when I grow
a little
up.
Bit,
and
yeah.
Here you are sitting next to them.
Yep. So that was good. I got to meet Tim Schafer and Warren Spector.
Who are they?
Tim Schafer did the Monkey Island games and Psychonauts and a couple of other awesome games. He's known for his sort of comedy in his games. Warren Spector did Deus Ex and Epic Mickey and a couple of others as well.
So what
Shock.
Did they talk about? How they developed them and the processes?
Yeah, well, Tim talked about the writing aspect a lot, which was really good for me being a writer. I really enjoyed hearing what he was saying about his creative process. And it really surprised me that he's this great, famous writer and he's got such a name behind him that their Kickstarter made $1 billion. And with that comes, you know, amazing expertise. Yet when he's starting an idea, he treats it like it's a fledgling bird, like a really delicate little bird, and he doesn't let anyone get near it, and he's very protective over it, and he's very nervous about whether his idea is good or not, and then he'll share it with two people, and then if they think it's good, he'll share it with four people, and then if you know, it's a very gradual process, which I thought it was really humbling and quite sweet to hear that for. Even the greats sometimes get nervous with their ideas, which made me feel a bit better about my really crummy ideas that I have in my studio. So that was really good.
Yeah.
It was quite sweet.
Everyone's
to get an insight into that. Yeah, well, not really. But, you know, some are better than others. But it gave me the confidence to sort of keep going. And no, it was great. It was lots of fun. And if you want to, if you're in Melbourne and you can get down to the Game Masters exhibition, you should. It's $22 a ticket for adults, I think. Last time I was there, this woman was getting tickets at the front and said, yes, it's $22, but how much do I have to put in the arcades when I get down there?
Oh, dear.
I said, none at all. It's in the ticket. Like, we've disabled it. You don't have to put coins in the arcades. So there's an amazing little...
for those that haven't been before, I guess.
Yeah. There's an amazing little...
I guess it's
little,
a valid question.
Yeah, if you're expecting it.
Yeah.
But it's there's a little arcade alleyway as you first go downstairs that has all of our old favourites on it, which was really good. Tim Schafer spent a lot of time playing those while he was here.
Old favourites. How old were the old favourites? Are we talking like dinosaur?
Space Invaders.
Space Invaders. Dinosaur old?
I'll give you an idea of how old they were.
Galaga?
Yes.
Love Galaga.
I wanted a potato cake and a minimum serve of chips when I walked in there because it's the old arcade that used to be at the fish and chip shop is definitely in there. Yeah, so I definitely wanted
Frogger?
A potato cake. And
Frogger?
I think Frogger is there. Yeah.
Frogger. Asteroids?
Yeah, Space Invaders is there.
Space Invaders.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think Asteroids is there. But there's
Donkey Kong.
Yes, I played Donkey Kong.
Yep. How good's that?
The original, yeah.
Zork?
No.
No. It's an arcade game.
There's actually 125 playable games there, ranging from the arcades to they've got Dance Central 2 on a big stage where you can dance. And they've got a little indie arcade as well, where they've got a lot of famous indie games in there. And they've got some amazing sort of ephemera, so like sketches and Tim Schafer's job application to LucasArts. He did it as a choose-your-own-adventure type point-and-click adventure.
Oh, that's
so
cute.
Yeah, so they've got that on the wall that you can read it. And he said he went to all that trouble because he really stuffed up the phone interview. So he had to really try hard to get another one. But yeah, it's really cool to see all that stuff. And there's a lot of concept art and a lot of amazing things.
Ray says Moon Patrol in the chat. Remember Moon Patrol?
Ah.
Gee whiz.
Moon Patrol was awesome. I remember playing Moon Patrol.
Yes. Yep. That was some, yeah, he had to, yeah, anyway.
Excuse me.
You'd shoot up.
It's for another show.
You'd shoot the things.
Yes,
that were,
yeah.
But you'd be like perpetually moving across to the right.
Mm.
You'd always be on the move.
Dragon's Lair.
They've also got a really good wall of all the consoles we've pretty much ever had. This is the largest gaming exhibition that's ever happened in the world, and it started in Melbourne, so it's very exciting.
Fantastic.
You should go down and have a look.
When does it run till?
Till October, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's all included in your ticket price.
It is. Yeah. You get to play all the games.
So all the mums and dads should take their children down and say this is what they were addicted to during the course of their childhood.
Yes.
Yes.
This is or what obsessed played at fish with. And
chip. Yes. That.
Yeah. So, yeah. No, definitely go down there and have a look. It was amazing. But we were talking about Minecraft before.
We were.
The Minecraft PC version is about to receive its largest patch in months with 1.3.
Ooh.
On August 1st, it will... there will be a release that will unify single and multiplayer engines.
Yep.
Add training with non-player characters.
Oh.
And tripwires for traps.
Tripwires?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Where do you get Minecraft from should you choose to go down this path?
from Mojang.
Is it online?
So, yeah, online. Yeah. I haven't seen any boxed versions. I'm sure there would be, though. I'm absolutely certain they'd have to have them in shops, but I've not personally seen any because I got mine back when it was still in beta, so I haven't had to go to the shops to have a look for it. Minecraft's PC version will receive one of its most significant overhauls since its release. The first-person exploration and creation game will receive several optimizations. I love how vague that is. Optimizations. As well as new features to enhance its randomly generated worlds and their mining masses. The single-player mode as a shell on top of its multiplayer mode seems to be the biggest shift. It'll attempt to unify any sort of bugs that were coming about through mods and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
They're also introducing a currency system for trading with the non-player character villagers in the form of emeralds.
A currency system.
A currency system
So you can shop now.
Not really. It's more that there's going to be emeralds which work as currency, which you can trade with the non-player character. So just not too long ago, they introduced non-player characters. So you could be walking in one direction and find a village with people in it.
Yep.
Now you can start to trade with those people for the things that they have in their houses.
Yeah, cool.
With these emeralds. You can also start as a new player with a bonus chest full of things to survive with for the first few hours in the new world, which is kind of cool. There's a Reddit thread with all the full patch notes on it, but I think they're also on the Mojang website if you want to have a look on the blog. It's not known whether these changes are going to be seen in the Minecraft Xbox 360 edition yet. So I'll keep you updated, though, when that happens, if that happens. But so far, it's just PC.
Well, I've been into a village before, and I've set up shop there and done stuff and used it as a base of operations. Mm. But after a while, all the villagers disappear.
Oh.
Like, they're trying to tell me I need to use more deodorant or something.
Oh.
They vanish. Really?
Well, maybe now you can buy some with some emeralds.
I'll have to. Mm. I'll have to. Minecraft.net is where you go to
Is it expensive,
buy it, Andrew? No, I don't think it's expensive. Okay. Not for the amount of fun you have and the amount of time and that you put into
Excuse
it.
Excuse me. Mm. No, yeah, I think I bought it for...
It's a few bucks.
I bought it for €14, and that was while it was still in beta, so it's more than that now. But I think it's about €36, maybe €40. I can't remember.
Gee, excuse us all in here tonight.
But it's not your $60, $100 game.
€20, Andrew.
€20.
There you go. Excellent. Log in.
So what's that, 80 cents to the euro at the moment, isn't it? So what's that, about $23, $24 bucks maybe?
Bargain. Absolute bargain.
$25 A digital download, I assume.
It is.
Yes.
Yep.
What else is happening?
THQ has consolidated its stock in a bid to stay on the NASDAQ. I talked about this a little bit a couple of months ago, I think now, how when their stock price dropped below $1 a share, they're not allowed to list on the NASDAQ anymore. And they had to drop off the NASDAQ. And now they're going to try. I'm not a stock person, so forgive me if I totally butcher this. The company's board has approved a 1-for-10 reverse stock split maneuver.
Whee.
Oof, in order to raise the per share value to $1 or more before the January 23rd deadline. They're trying to do this approved by the Agora Hills, California company board. But you see, I really don't get it. They had a delisting notice in January.
What, off the NASDAQ?
Off the NASDAQ, yeah. So they had to raise that price or get out. The reverse stock split will reduce the number of THQ shares from 68.5 million to approximately 6.9 million. In a statement, THQ explained that the purpose of the reverse stock split is to raise the per share trading price of its stock to $1 or above in order to regain compliance with NASDAQ's terms. They have till July 23 to boost its value to $1 or more.
Then they're off.
Yeah. So that's a really big deal. THQ have their fingers in a lot of pies, so that would be a big loss if they were to go under.
Why have they fallen off the perch so much, do you think?
They have not been making very good stuff.
As in good decisions or just making good saleable product?
Things that they were innovating with all got sort of shelved, so they were playing it very safe to try and save a bit of money in the GFC and everything. And, a lot of the IP that they'd bought, that they'd paid for, they just weren't using. So just generally not in a good way. Not in a good way. They were closing down a lot of studios. They closed down all our Australian studios and that kind of thing, and it just doesn't help. It just has a flow effect.
So they pulled their head in and potentially a little bit too far, and it's having effects.
Yeah, they just kept cancelling things, and it costs a lot of money to cancel things. So, speaking of people who spend lots of money for no particular reason, Sony are going to acquire...
Oh, Sony.
They're going to acquire cloud gaming service Gaikai for $380 million.
Why?
Exactly. Sony Computer Entertainment announced it's in the final stages of acquiring cloud gaming network Gaikai for approximately $380 million.
What does cloud gaming mean? Online gaming?
Yes.
It's like Facebook and your
SimCity, isn't it? It's a cloud streaming. Not really, no. It's saying Sony will deliver a world-class cloud streaming service that allows users to instantly enjoy a broad array of content ranging from immersive core games with rich graphics to casual content anytime, anywhere, on a variety of internet-connected devices.
So take the superlatives out of that, and basically they're just letting you play games online.
Pretty much.
Really?
They needed a cloud...
And they need a hosting facility so they can do that.
They needed a way to give you games on the cloud, and people don't trust Sony anymore, so they bought a trusted brand.
No, they don't, do they?
apparently, though, they've come out and said that they're not going to be just using it for games. So it's probably going to be a content-providing thing in terms of like
movies.
Other media. Yeah, movies and music, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of money to be throwing around when you're Sony and you're not doing too well at the moment. $380 million on cloud-based services is a lot of money.
Maybe just divide and conquer approach. Maybe they were worried that they were getting too big for their boots, so they've said,
"Maybe
right,
yeah.
Now you're ours."
Yeah, maybe they were the competition.
Mm.
Not anymore.
I wouldn't have thought Sony'd have any competition in cloud-based hosting, but nonetheless.
Mm.
Well, yeah, with cloud-based game or internet-based games, like look at what happened with the PlayStation Network, they would have lost a lot of customers after that debacle 12 months ago.
I think so too.
So maybe they're going to keep the name so they don't have to be known as Sony in an online gaming environment. Maybe.
Ooh.
Yeah, I don't know, just trying to get people back one way or the other.
Yeah. Hey, Lance, how's your Diablo going? Have you given up on it yet?
I don't like Diablo 3.
Oh, really?
What?
Bum, bum, bum!
Oh,
I don't.
This is a girl
she
who bought
it.
The U-Butte. You
she
couldn't get
it
any
now.
Better collector's edition, and we were over there, and she got out a little USB key off that funny thing and said, look, it's all the other one. And you don't like it?
I was so excited. I don't not like it. That's probably not
You're
fair.
Just not playing it.
I'm just. It's not everything I wanted it to be.
What did you want it to be?
Harder and more fun.
And it failed on both of those accounts, did it?
Yes, yep.
Well,
everything,
that's no good.
Everything is easy. It's my first Diablo.
You can't go backwards in a gaming. Mm. So what's the future for this genre now? Is it going to...
Well, I think that was...
Is it the Vista?
Only...
Is it going to come out with Windows 7 down the track, or is it that's going to be the end of it?
I think the third was the last in the Diablo franchise, but I'm hoping not, because you guys need to do some more work to improve this, because it's terrible. It's actually
really
I will say it's pretty damn bad. Yeah, it's
Are you sure this isn't a case of just very, very high, unrealistically high expectations
that
been waiting for so many years?
Mm, I thought that, but then my beefs are not with it not being what I wanted it to be so much as just continually being disappointed at the decision that they had made at specific junctures in the game. So it's not that I liked it, walked away and kind of went, oh, I wanted that to be a bit better. It was the fact that, oh, seriously, you've done that? Oh, okay. Oh,
so you're
seriously, you've done that? Oh, God, okay.
You've gone into the game expecting a scenario to pan out in a different way, expecting to be better than the previous
game.
And you've been disappointed.
It doesn't even necessarily have to have been better than Diablo 2, to be honest, because I love Diablo 2 so much. I just wanted a nice homage.
So it wasn't even as good?
No, definitely not. No, it's not as fun. It's prettier. It's a hell of a lot prettier, and I would want to be after, over a decade, but it just is kind of dull.
Dr. Ron, did you venture down this path you were talking about?
Not yet, no.
Are you?
Not yet, no.
Stick to Minecraft?
Stick where you know you're going to have fun, which would be Minecraft. You can play mine for a while if you like, but...
Give it a try.
Yeah, just to see. Go up to like level 10 to get an idea.
Sounds like you'd be better off going back and playing Diablo 2 instead.
I will be. Yeah.
Well, that's a sad state of when the biggest hyped game to come out falls flat on.
Very disappointed.
So glad I'm not into games.
Ray in our chat room asks, is Diablo 3 the Nokia of gaming?
Oh, no. No, I can't have that. No, I can't have
too
that.
Too far, Ray. Too far.
Too soon.
You could have asked if it was the rim of.
Still hurts. No, it still hurts. it's not a terrible game.
It's unfortunate because you were looking forward to it for so long.
I know, yeah. It's not a terrible game. Some people probably love it. If you haven't played Diablo 2, you'd probably actually really like it. But it's just not the homage that I wanted it to be.
So what's the next big thing on the horizon? Because you've been looking forward to that ever since the beginning of the year, if not further back.
What game am I most looking forward to?
What's the next big one on the horizon?
Probably Watch Dogs.
What's that about?
We saw that at E3 this year. That's all about sort of using hacking and electrical ways of getting into things to get sort of your objectives met, which looked really interesting. There was messing around with traffic lights and intercepting phone calls and whatnot, and just sort of an espionage kind of thing. That kind of looked cool, but that's still about 2 years away, so we'll see.
Was there a gameplay preview of that?
There was.
Watch Dogs?
Yeah, yeah.
We spoke about that a few weeks ago as well, I think.
Yeah,
on YouTube or?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. You can look it up there. But yeah, no, there's nothing I'm really hanging out for anymore, which is really unfortunate.
Okay.
I might take up Halo. No, I will not take up Halo.
You'll just have to write something better, Lena.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll have to make better games. Yeah.
Put your dev cap on. Off you go.
If I was writing Diablo 3, it would have been completely different. I'll tell you that.
Oh, maybe you should work for them.
Oh, you're right. EA...
Electronic Arts
are going to be going 100% digital.
What does that mean? Isn't gaming already digital?
Well, not 100%. No, they still have hardware in shops.
Oh, okay. So they're going to get out of the hardware space, are they?
They are, and I think this is a massive mistake on behalf of EA. If they're saying that it's going to be soon, he said it's in the near future. It's coming, but it's not right now. It's not going to happen immediately. But I think with Origin, which is their version of Steam that EA have. It runs like a dog. It doesn't even run on Mac at all. They don't even have a Mac version of it. Going completely digital would be a huge mistake for them at the moment with the way they've got things set up. So a lot of things would have to change.
At the moment, do they sell games for Mac?
Yes.
So they're either going to have to drop all the Mac games or they're going to have to improve their online thing.
Yeah. Origin's going to have to change completely if they're going to be relying on it. Completely.
Perhaps they need to team up with Sony, didn't they? Just buy one.
Yeah. You can't buy Steam, but you could make one very similar to it. Mm. Personally, I think they should just get rid of Origin altogether and do a really good deal with Steam to get you a nice juicy cut of whatever you're selling and move on because Origin's really bad.
It makes sense. People are not going to want to be members of 27 different online game sites, are they?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. But like EA. Published Portal 2, so and I really enjoyed Portal and Portal 2. So if they just decided to not make games for me anymore, I'd be mortified. Mortified.
They did a dodgy the only modern game I've played is Portal.
Exactly.
They did a dodgy deal with Facebook as well.
Ah, EA. Okay.
Yeah, SimCity.
They're
bringing SimCity to Facebook.
Yeah.
How's that going to work?
A dumbed down version?
I think it will have to be a dumbed down version.
SimCity was good. I used to like SimCity many, many years
ago. The new one looks amazing. Yeah. Not the Facebook one, but the actual full release.
Get off Facebook, for goodness sakes. Anyway.
Speaking of Valve and Steam, Valve are releasing a movie making tool that they used to. Source Filmmaker for PC was used to make the Team Fortress 2 Meet the Team videos, which, if you've played Team Fortress 2, you might have seen them. There's Meet the Spy, Meet the Medic, Meet the Sniper, and all that. So they do like a little funny video introducing each of the characters and how they relate. They've just released their Meet the Pyro video, which is hilarious if you like TF2. If you don't, it might be a bit confronting. But it's actually very, very funny. I'll show it to you guys after the show.
Oh, show and tell.
Is
this safe for work?
No, okay. I wouldn't watch it at work. There's nothing sexual in there, but there's violence in there, so I wouldn't personally put like have that on my PC and have your boss walk past and go, what are you watching? So this movie making tool you can get on your PC and start making sort of machinima videos with the Valve assets. So you can use all of the what have we got here? You've got all the assets from TF2's 9 characters, hundreds of locations, thousands of props, particles, textures, and sounds. Additionally, assets that players build in the Steam Workshop can be loaded into the Filmmaker as well.
Sounds like this is someone, if you've got too much spare time on your hands, this app is going to be for you.
Or if you just really like Team Fortress.
Well, there you go.
That's the non-judgmental way of looking at it.
So you could you can make the characters do what you like, say what you like, yep. make the so you could put on a performance of Hamlet in the
you could.
Team Fortress universe. Is that the
you
idea?
You could, yeah. And a lot of people do. There's a lot of good Machinima videos out there. People have been using Gary's mod in the past to make a lot of these videos. So
who's Gary?
Exactly. so the fact that Valve have come out and released one of these is really exciting. It's apparently really lovely to work with. I haven't personally had a go of it yet, but it's a hybrid of various different workflows in terms of movie making tools. So there's a renderer, a 2D video clip editor, a keyframer, a motion capture editor, and a sound editor.
Got everything.
So yeah, you can, I'm getting you can out do of some really amazing stuff.
I'm being usurped by a phone application.
Well, it's not on your phone. No, it's on your PC.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but there's going to be some amazing TF2 Machinima coming out, which is really exciting, and I'll show you guys the video later.
Cool.
But look it up. Meet the Pyro is the ninth and final installment in the Meet the Team
videos. I love the show in the green room after we get off the show. It continues.
It does.
Thanks, Lance. Anything else? Sorry.
No worries. No, I think that does me for
excellent.
Today, I think.
That's good timing. A couple other things I want to touch briefly on before we go to the break. Then we're going to come back with the OddSpot gadget app and website of the week. There's been a bit of a Trojan found in the Apple App Store, which snuck past everyone's scanners in Apple land.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. A Trojan had been found on the App Store. And it was called Find and Call, which is a little app.
This was in the Google Play market as well. It's exactly the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, what it does, it uploads a user's phone book and GPS coordinates to a remote server and then sends spam SMS messages to URLs and contacts. How good's that?
Yeah.
And that snuck through.
I was about to say that snuck through. Apple didn't pick up on that one, did they? But no.
Well, they had other issues during the course of the week, which may have diverted their attention. Because they had, remember the App Store was crashing? I don't know whether anyone tried to download an app in the last week and came up corrupted and the likes.
That was a separate issue.
It was a separate issue, but it probably took the heat off the other app, which I think was a Russian app too. They built all the good apps over there in .ru. But this particular one, Apple was actually had problems with their DRM, digital rights management. Now, I'm not quite sure how that actually applies to downloading of apps. Obviously, they put something on it so you can't share it.
Yeah.
But, this was causing all the apps to crash.
Causing the apps to get corrupted when they load an update. Yeah. Not good. Not good at all.
So, I don't know. Anyway, it would have been interesting to see what actually happened on a handset. Would have just come up and just
apparently, when you launch the app, it would just crash. Yeah, just fail.
Hmm. All right. And, we've been talking about backups and archives and cloud storages and stuff like that these days.
Yeah, yep.
And Dropboxes and what the difference is between Dropboxes and backup services and all that sort of stuff. Hopefully we've made sense over in the past few weeks. If not, go and listen to some of the podcasts. But RapidShare, which is how would you describe those people? You uploaded something to it and people could then log in and download it many, many times. I think a lot of companies that develop software use these facilities for doing all their distribution.
It's one of the, isn't it another one of those services for being able to upload large files that so you can send things that are too big to attach to an email.
Yeah,
you can use this thing to and send an email with a link to it to download.
Yeah, we usually do that with Dropbox because you can do that in Dropbox. If you haven't noticed, you've got a public folder in Dropbox, and let's say for example, Dr. Ron, I wanted to send you a 100 meg file. For example, I could drop that 100 meg file into my Dropbox, my public folder on Dropbox, and then right click and go collect the link. And then email you the link and you just start downloading it straight away. Great service.
If I already subscribed to that public folder, that file would replicate its way around.
Oh, can you subscribe to a public folder, can you? I don't think you could.
No, you share them.
I don't think you can share a public folder in Dropbox.
Your public folder is always public.
Yeah. But you can't actually get to
I'm confusing it with a shared folder, aren't I?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the public folders are unique in respect to the fact that if I wanted to share a file specifically with you, you put it in there, you copy the link.
Yeah, that's right, you're right.
Email it to you. But
sorry, I was thinking of a shared folder, yeah.
Yeah, but the share folders replicate. Anyway, RapidShare, the people that do this sort of stuff, have also get into the game now because there's a lot of this going around. And they've got a Dropbox competitor called RapidDrive. And that was unveiled this week. And, just more for the offering if you're into that sort of stuff. But
have you used Google Drive at all?
I've loaded it up.
Yep,
icon is sitting on my desktop.
Same.
And I've always gone back to Dropbox because it seems to be it just works.
I think Google Drive is the Google Plus of file distribution and collaboration. Yeah.
I must admit, I've been using Dropbox to remove all, you know, the happy snaps you take with your mobile phone that you always delete or lose down the track.
Yeah.
I've actually set Dropbox up to actually, when you take a photo on
you
the
can,
phone.
It can automatically upload.
It automatically uploads it. So it just appears in your desktop in a folder so you can do with it what you want. So you can take the photo, walk into the other room, it's already there. Sitting on your hard drive, more or less.
You can tell it if you only want it to work when you're connected to a Wi-Fi network, or you can say, upload it even if I'm on a mobile data network.
And now what I've done at our household is my wife's phone too, which we found, by the way.
Oh, yes, you said that. You mentioned
that. I sent in a tweet.
Yeah.
Yeah, she lost her iPhone 4S for 11 days.
And you couldn't do the find my iPhone thing because the battery was flat.
Yeah. There's a trick for young players. It doesn't even tell you where it was last heard, which I was very disappointed at.
Really?
It doesn't tell you that.
Oh, I thought it'd say last seen 3 days ago here. No?
It'll do that for about an hour and in my research, so I was a bit disappointed with that. But nonetheless, yes, we set up her phone so that when she takes a photo on hers, it comes through to my phone through Dropbox and vice versa and just permeates its way through the home folders on the computers. But a very good way because you can sort of share things without having to share things. It's great.
Should we ask where the phone was?
Oh, you can, and I'm more than happy to tell you. It was on her messy desk.
That's one messy desk.
It's one messy desk buried under many, many ton of paper and paraphernalia and all that sort of stuff. And
I'm glad you found it. You didn't have to report it lost or stolen.
We knew it hadn't gone far. We knew it had been misplaced. I said, "Did you find any credit cards there while you're at it?" No, no. But anyway, we shouldn't talk about airing linen and doing all that sort of stuff in public. But anyway, we found it. All good. So she's now got a few days to use her plan and spend $800 worth of phone calls.
How long was it missing for?
11 days.
11 days. 11 days? Was she without a telephone for 11 days?
Yes.
I would have broken out in hives. Oh,
she turned it on. You should have heard the thing went berserk. Beep, beep, beep.
Oh, I would have.
Why don't you call me back? And all of... Yeah, anyway. I shouldn't dwell on it. But yes, losing a phone for 11 days, you wouldn't want to turn on. You'd change a number, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Goodness. It would be like cutting off your right hand.
It is.
Has she got iCloud turned on?
Yeah.
Yeah. But it still didn't work?
No.
Hmm.
No, and they notify that. If you go and have a look in iCloud and look for Find My Phone, it will not work after a couple of hours after the battery has died. It only works when the battery is good. So live and learn, people. We learnt the hard way.
Hmm.
We're very fortunate that it wasn't in the back of a taxi. It was actually buried under the bench. Underneath all of her papers. Anyway, we're going to have the Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
Ah!
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics!
Cool! This thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Thank you, Craig, for this week's suggestion, the USB typewriter. If you miss the good old days and want to relive the time when writing was an experience, this is the gadget for you, says Craig.
You thought my typing was noisy before.
Yeah, that's right. Tap, 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 tap. www.usbtypewriter.com. This is actually a do-it-yourself conversion kit. So you can convert any old typewriter to be a keyboard.
That's cool.
For your computer. It turns it into a USB device. It actually is comprised of three components. There's like a sensor board, which is a long strip of flexible metal contacts that clip easily underneath the keys of the actual typewriter. There's the USB interface board, which features a microcontroller and a USB socket and some supporting components.
You'd have to be diehard to do this, wouldn't
you? Yeah, and there are also read switches, because the sensor board only detects keys that strike the crossbar, so several important keys would otherwise go undetected, like the spacebar, return, carriage return, and so on. So to deal with those keys, you have special read switches.
Let's have an alt key.
Well, that's right. The whole kit retails for about $75, and I think it's, if you look at some of the images there, very, very clever. It's ingenious, in fact.
Really?
Good gadget. Thanks for the contribution, Craig. If you want to know more about that gadget, usbtypewriter.com is the place to go.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio Website of the Week.
This week's website, Topsy.com, T-O-P-S-Y.com. It's a social media search engine. Have you ever wanted to just search social media?
Yes.
No.
Andrew, close your ears for 30 seconds. Okay. Lena, this is the search engine for you. Topsy's fast indexing technology ingests massive amounts of authored content, which is public from the world's largest social networks like Twitter and Facebook, and uses live ranking software to index the data. Topsy says it identifies the most important content seconds after it's been posted to the social web. Look, it's got a nice, simple, clean interface. It shows you what's trending right now in social media. You've even got a search field there, so you can search for text or images or video. Andrew, start listening again. That's okay, our website.
Sorry, what was it?
Topsy, T-O-P-S-Y.com.
Tech Talk Radio, App of the Week.
Thank you, GD, for this week's suggestion.
Hi, GD.
Flux.
Pardon?
Back to the future.
F-L-U-X.
A flux capacitor.
Flux. Ever notice how people texting at night have that eerie blue glow?
No.
Their faces are bathed in that blue. Andrew, don't listen for 30 seconds. Lena,
no,
do you wake up ready to write down the next great idea in the middle of the night, but you get blinded by your computer screen?
Yes.
During the day, computer screens can look good, but at 9 p.m. or 10 p.m. or 3 a.m, maybe you shouldn't be looking directly at the sun. Flux fixes this. F.Lux. It makes the colour of your computer's display adapt to the time of day, so it's warm at night and like sunlight during the day.
Cool.
It's a nifty little app available for Mac, Windows, PC, Linux, and iPhone and iPad. There you go. For more information, have a look at...
Macs do it anyway.
Stereopsis.
But I'm sure
my Android does that as well. Sorry, where?
Stereopsis.com. S-T-E-R-E-O-P-S-I-S. So stereopsis.com/flux.
Come visit the website. Ours, that is. And we'll put a link there.
There it is.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
Ma, the meatloaf!
Bon. James Bond.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Renowned British physicist Stephen Hawking says the discovery of the Higgs boson particle has cost him $100 in a bet.
Higgs boson.
Sorry.
In an interview, don't apologise. In an interview with the BBC Wednesday, Mr. Hawking, who has motor neurone disease, said this is an important result and should earn Peter Higgs the Nobel Prize. But it's a pity in a way, because great advances in physics have come from experiments that give results we didn't expect. And for this reason, I had a bet with Gordon Kane at Michigan University that the Higgs particle wouldn't be found. It seems I've just lost $100.
Oh.
That's our odd spot, Andrew.
Hawking has a history of making those sorts of bets. He bets against the his own theories so that he wins
covers
either way.
So that
he wins either way, yeah.
Clever man.
Political parties do that too, don't they?
He's a very clever man, to say the least, yes.
That is Tech Talk Radio for this week. Thank you, linesman. Thank you, ball boys. We'll go back to our sick beds now. Hopefully, we'll all feel a lot better next week. And, you know,
I feel fine.
Yeah, good. We'll roll reverse.
Lick.
Oh, no, not again. So, you know,
have some plague.
Thanks for licking my eyeball. That was really helpful. That's really good.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au. If you'd like to send us an email, we'll read it out on the radio. Got a dilemma, let us know. And all and sundry. So that'd be good. So till next week, I think that's about it for this week. Anything else? Anyone? Gang? Should I push the button? No? We're all
bye.
Done. All signed. All the hammer's about to go down. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter. Join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.